This is your girl, Kim Knox, and welcome to my podcast. Today I'm asking the question, did feminism kill chivalry and our thought process as women as to what we really want? This morning, as I take my normal drive to Arden's Garden to get my healthy smoothie for breakfast, I sat and had a conversation with a slightly younger woman than myself. And I say slightly, but she might be like at least about 10 years younger than me. But I came in and they were playing Michael Jackson. This is how the conversation started. And she was saying, oh, I'm just so over the Michael Jackson this morning. They've been playing it like around the clock. She's more of a Prince fan. And so we got into this heavy duty conversation about how I grew up. I grew up in a household full of music. And I like to think that I grew up in a time where I got an opportunity to listen to all types of music. I was born in the 70s, so I got a little Motown. I saw the disco era kind of come and go. And then there was like the 80s. And for a lot of the African Americans, we didn't have a lot of blacks that created music in that time. I was explaining to her that we had like a lot of blue-eyed soul. And in conversation, I was telling her, yeah, I used to, when I was in high school, people who listen that know when I was in high school, I sang an awful lot. That's what I did. And I oftentimes aspired to be a musician, which that did not pan out for me. I could probably start back trying to do some gigs, but like it would at this point be strictly because it's something that I just want to do, and I can do that at home or do it like during karaoke or whatnot. But she asked the question, why didn't I pursue a music career? And I'm gonna ask that a lot, especially by like classmates, because when I was in school, I did a lot musically. I won the female most talented in my class. And so a lot of people are like, I can't believe you didn't pursue music. And for a bit, I probably tried to, but other than that, honestly, I never aspired to really be anything more than, this is going to sound really crazy, but I really wanted to, my focus was wanting to be a good wife and a good mother. And I think that a lot of times society downplays that as if that's all you want to do is just be a wife and a mother. You can still do that and do other things too. But I don't think that housewives or stay-at-home moms get as much credit as a lot of other people do because you have jobs or and so... Myself and the young lady actually brought up a very good point. She said, you know, feminism has really killed not only chivalry, but it's just killed a lot of things for us as women. And I totally agree because, you know, we want it to go like we have this thing where women can do everything men can do. And for the most part, I feel that is correct. In some areas, it's a shade of gray. But, and a woman can be both a mother and a wife and still have a very vibrant career. But if she doesn't want to go that route, should she be scorned for having that thought process? Should she be shunned because she wants to stay at home and be a loving and doting mother? Because I think that's an awesome thing to be. As a younger person, when I was coming out of high school, I know my mom did, or my mom, my aunts, and my family were doing what they knew to do, which is, no, you need to go to school, you need to get an education, you need to do this because, you know, you need to be able to take care of yourself. And I'm all for that. I still think that your parents should encourage you to do that. And if you're not a college, because everybody's not a college person. I get into this argument all the time, and particularly with my sibling. I don't think that you necessarily have to go to a four-year institution to be a success. Success is subjective. It could mean that you're the best stay-at-home mom, or that, yeah, you might have a thriving career. I look at so many people who went to college and who had that education and still absolutely miserable because they're doing it all for the sake of money and things. In my history of coming up with my cousins, and some of the happiest moments in my life were moments where we didn't have a dime, or we had little to no money, and that money we had to use our imagination, or we just enjoyed each other's company, and that was some of the best times. I mean, hell, my mom was a single parent for a very long time. And she worked two jobs. She didn't have a lot of money, but some of the best times of my life were when people would just randomly drop by our house and we would talk shit and laugh our asses off all night. That was fun to me versus having a shitload of money, but one, never having time for the sake of being tired or always working. It's just different now. And so I just know too many people now that are just miserable and unhappy with their lives, but we keep going because you got this big ass house that you have to pay the mortgage on, or you're trying to pay the note on that car note because of appearance sake, how it looks to other people. Not only that, women have this, I don't need you for shit type attitude, whereas I don't need a man to take me. Now, I think it's great to not need a man for it, but at the same time, I want you to know that I need you. There's a Jill Scott song, one of my favorite ones. I want to say it's called We Need You or something like that. It's do 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 do. If you listen to Just God, you know exactly. She goes through this whole thing of what she can do for herself, but at the end of the day, she still needs you as a man. I need you as a husband, a father, a brother. I need you. And so many times as women, we have this, I don't need a man for nothing, especially Black women, because we're so damn strong. And we give off this thing where, well, I don't need your Black ass. And then we get mad when the men are going over to other races, being with other women, because they're like, oh, you don't need our Black ass. So this woman over here, I think at the end of the day, sometimes it's good to show a little vulnerability. I was single for a very long time. And if my husband's listening, he probably gonna crack up laughing. But I was single for a very long time, and I had to handle a lot of shit on my own, whether I wanted to or not, whether I was scared of the spider or not, whether I saw a cockroach flying and I had to kill that mug myself, whatever it was, I had to do it. I had to learn how to do it on my own, because that's what you have to do when you're in that space. But it took me a long time to get that. When I got my husband, I think the struggle is that I was so accustomed, and I tell my mom this all the time now because we have these conversations, and particularly about marriage and about being a strong woman and having been strong for so long on your own. It's hard to allow a man to come into your life and be a man. And sometimes you have to dial back that independent shit and let a man be a man. Yes, you could probably go in there and fix the sink by yourself. You could probably, hell, I was putting oil in my car for the longest by my damn self because I didn't have anybody. But now I have a husband who just so happens to be a mechanic. So you know what? Let me take a step back, brush my hands off, and let him have it and let him be a man. I like being taken care of. I like being adored. I like being, I like being feminine and allowing the man to be a man. That doesn't mean that I'm not strong. It just means that in this moment, I want to be catered to, just like he deserves to be catered to and being being treated like a man, the man that he deserves to be treated. So I do think that in some lights, being a feminist or being in that area of feminism has taken over the fact that, you know, now we feel like we can do everything on our own. And yes, we can. As women, yes, we can. We're mothers, we're wives, we do everything. But sometimes you have to know how to step back a bit and let him take the reins for a bit, you know. And if you want to be a stay-at-home mom, the only thing I would say, like I told the young lady in the store today, is this. You should always be smart. What is smart, Kim? I would still go get some education because, you know, most people don't get married right out of school. So I would go and get some form of education. Is a four-year degree necessarily? Not really. I feel like you can pick up a trade, and if you should later on feel like you want to go back to school, there's nothing wrong with that. It's just harder once you establish a family, whatnot. But I would also make an arrangement with my husband that I get an allowance, if it's possible, because everybody's household is different. If it's possible, so that you can push back money for yourself, because here's why. I think a lot of times it depends on your husband, depends on what type of lifestyle you lead, but it's always a tug of war control thing, because you're not working. He runs shit, and sometimes men can get cocky and they feel like, oh, well, I'm the one who's making all the money and you're not doing anything, blah, blah, blah. So by you getting some form of cash or money, I would say that, hey, you still are in control of yourself. Hell, even if you want to do a work from home type deal, I would say do something to keep a little bit of cash. Always keep yourself some money stashed away, because people change. People's agendas change. And just because you are a loving, doting woman does not always mean. And also, here's the thing about this too. Just because you're sitting your ass at home don't mean that keeps you, should keep you from looking a certain way. Men are very visual people. They go into work every day, and I laugh when women tell me, oh, my husband don't like me to wear makeup, or my husband don't like me to wear weave. Let me tell you something. Every time your husband is out, he looking at somebody who got on makeup and who wearing weave or whatever the case is. And just like sometimes we lie to our husbands, our boyfriends or whatever, and say, boy, I ain't looking at him. And then back in my mind, he is fine as hell. But they have eyes and they look. And if you found them attractive, somebody else finds them attractive too. And if they're having conversation, they being able to have a conversation with your husband or your man, please believe a thought or two sometimes runs across their mind. They got to come home to your ass and you still, your hair is all over your head and you ain't took the time to dress yourself up and look. In other words, keep yourself up. I'm not saying you got to wear makeup. I don't wear makeup every day. But I know how to get cute when it's time. For the most part, my skincare game is on point. So my skin is pretty flawless. So I don't have to wear makeup every day. But you want to keep yourself up to the point where you don't look haggard every time he's walking in the door just because you've been with the kids all day. Let's not make excuses. But life can be just as grand as a mother, a stay-at-home mother. and wife as you do if you were going out every day. This is Kim Knox. This is your girl, Kim Knox, and welcome to my podcast. Today, I am talking about Netflix movie, Napoli Ever After. So if you're anything like me, I've kind of been waiting on this movie to come out ever since last year when I saw Sanaa cut all her hair off. And I'm like, what in the entire hell? But I'm going to be honest with you. I actually am feeling Sanaa's head shaved off better than her with the hair, and she had absolutely gorgeous hair. I just think that there is something to be said about a woman who, one, can exude enough confidence to go fully bare and still look, pulls it off effortlessly. She's just always, to me, been a pretty girl. I didn't think that she was necessarily outright gorgeous. Like, I feel like Nia Long is, I guess, she's just a different kind of pretty. I feel like they're both gorgeous girls, but I just, you know, think that Nia Long just has a look more so. And I just feel like I'm a short hair girl, period. But when Sanaa cut her hair, it just did something for me. Like I think it did most people. It just showed a different side of herself. But let's get into it. So I never read the book, and I'm not sure. I want to say that it may be a children's book or geared towards children. It was made back in 2000, the year 2000. The author name, her last name is Thomas, but like I said, I never read the book, but I was still anxious to see the movie. It came out on yesterday, and I didn't want to watch it last night because sometimes I get tired and I doze off, and I wanted to give it my absolute full attention. I'm glad I did, even though it was a little short. Maybe it's short because now movies are a standard 2 hours long. We used to be in the movie theater or whatever for at least half a day now, but it was only an hour, but it was a nice hour. I felt like it addressed a lot of different issues. Yes, hair was mainly the big thing, but I also felt like this need to be perfect. I think that social media, just in general, has kind of painted this picture where we all have to be just perfect. Instagram models get on there, their makeup is flawless, the bodies are flawless, and a lot of people, not that it's anybody's business, because I feel like if you had surgery, that's your business until if and when you decide to disclose that to people. However, I feel like it's false advertisement when you go on IG or Facebook selling flat tummy tea and trying to sell fitness programs as if you actually somehow achieve that ass from squats, when we know that there's a lot of physicians around here doing fat transfers, implants, or you getting your titties done, whatever you want to do, that's on you. But I just don't think that you should advertise like, oh, I've been drinking this flat tummy tea, and now my stomach is flat, when you've been to the doctor and got lipo. That's just bullshit. But it also has us in this era where we think that we have to be perfect at all times. Your face got to be beat to the gods. Your hair has got to be flawless. You're wearing all these lace fronts, taking out your edges. Now you ain't got no edges. It's just gotten to be too much where, hell, men are starting to do it. And it's just crazy. But she felt like she had to be this perfect person based on the standards that her mom was basically grooming her. So spoiler alert, first of all, I should have said that. If you haven't seen it, don't listen to this because I'm going to give some things away. But her mom pretty much groomed her in hopes she'll marry
up, marry a doctor. I think that's a terrible message also, because we feel like we have to marry a physician, or we have to marry a lawyer, or we have to have quote unquote made it. How about just a hardworking man? I laugh because, you know, I saw a meme not too long ago about, would you date a man whose fingernails look like this? And it was a guy's nails who was dirty. And the comments up under it was just like, oh, hell no, if he can't clean his fingernails. And I and another person responded like, well, first of all, like, both of our, whoever she was dating or married to, my husband is a mechanic. That's what he does for a living. And he gets oil and grease under those fingernails. And he makes sure that this household is provided for. I don't worry about anything. Meanwhile, the doctors and lawyers that you're trying to bed or to get to marry you has a million women chasing after him for that very reason. And 9 times out of 10, he's playing you. And even if he does marry you, a lot of times, I'm not saying that the stereotype of, oh, if he's a hard worker, he's a good man. No, but sometimes you can be passing up a good man based off the type of job he does or the way that he looks, but you say you want to get married. So I found it interesting that she felt like she had to be perfect. I am never, even in my life, felt like I had to get up in the middle of the night or in the middle before whoever to make sure my hair and everything was perfect. But I understand that there are some people like that. Obviously, she was. And it wasn't until a disaster happened to where she had to change her hair, which eventually down the line led to her cutting all of her hair off. And I loved it because, being a natural myself, I went natural back in 2012, and I've had my ups and my downs and about it, but one thing I can say is that it's been very freeing. And I like it more so the shorter my hair is, because then I'm really free. I feel like the longer it gets, then you get right back into that pattern of worrying about, especially if you're doing twist outs or coil outs or getting the rods done, you still get back into that, oh, I'm trying to save my hair until Thursday. Let me tell you something. When I cut my hair off, I realized how much of life that I had not been living by, I don't know, like worrying about my hair, because you just get your hair done, it's gotta last you to the end of the week or for at least for 2 weeks. So you don't wanna work out, you know, you don't wanna go to the beach. If you're going to the beach, you gotta go get your hair braided because you can't have your hair wet. You can't, if it's right, oh my God. If it's gonna rain, it's gonna mess my hair up. It's just so many things. And when she was standing at that pool as a little girl and couldn't get in the pool, I just recall back like maybe 1997, around that era, this white gentleman asked me out on a date. White guys have been digging me. I tell black men that all the time. They think white men are not fascinated by black women. So not true. White guy asked me out. I wanted to go on a date. And his type of date was, he wanted to take me to Piedmont Park and we go rollerblading. First of all, my black ass can't skate. Second of all, I was really afraid to go, because I didn't want to be embarrassed. But I will say this, I feel like when it comes to Caucasian people or people of other ethnicities other than African Americans, they do more and they take more chances on things because they are more free not to worry about. And I also feel like that's a part of why a lot of black men are opting to go and deal with other races, because white women don't worry about their hair, or not that I know of, getting wet. If it gets wet, it just gets wet and it just dries. But for us, it's a process, and we don't want anybody to see us not being perfect unless you've just been with this man and he's helped you take your braids down and seen you. And that usually you've put in some time with that person. But when I became natural, I didn't run to the car because I was afraid of my hair getting wet. I was able to take Aqua Zumba. I worked out like 4 to 5 times a week. It just took it to a whole other level. And sometimes, because I do like change and I do like to look different, so occasionally I will get braids and I will do the wigs or the weaves. But for the most part, I don't miss not having relaxed hair. I don't miss sitting in the salons all daggone day. I don't miss paying a shitload of money on trying to buy the extensions and then trying to get the extensions installed. There's a lot about that whole process that I don't miss. There are a lot of things I can do with my own hair, and it's natural. And I can still throw a baseball cap or hat, whatever, on it. But I just thought that it was very insightful how she became free and allowed herself to take chances that she normally wouldn't, because she was so hell-bent on being perfect. And it took, the sad part about it is that basically it took a man that she was in love with to basically tell her, look, you don't even let your hair down. I don't even really know who you are. And so, no, hell no, I'm not going to marry you. Good thing he did kind of tell her. But, hey, it's 2 years. I don't feel like it's ever years wasted. But it is time wasted. But I felt like she got something out of that conversation, because shortly thereafter, she made a change, and it just made her a better person. I do wish it was a bit longer, because I felt like we were left wanting more. I wanted to know where the relationship with her and old dude was gonna go. But I also feel like that this could potentially be a segue for possibly maybe a show that will be featured on Netflix. Who knows? And also, the author of this book had several other books as well. So who knows? They may offer those different ones. But I just felt like Napoli Ever After went towards an issue that we pretty much all deal with, especially the natural, well, everybody, because if you have hair as a black woman, you know, that's a big issue with us. So you give me your feedback, what you think, you know, comment on my page, because I'll be putting a post up about it, and let me know what you think. I think that Netflix should bring a series so we know what happens with her and the guy and the kid. I feel like they'll get together, possibly going to get married. I don't know. This is Kim Knox.
This is your girl, Kim Knox, and welcome to my podcast. Today, I am taking on the topic of the Me Too movement. With all the conversation and the talks around everything from Bill Cosby to Brett Kavanaugh, is hard to ignore. Just in case you're wondering, the Me Too movement actually started back in 2006 by a young woman at the time, Tamara, I forgot her last name. However, it was basically started to help survivors of sexual violence, particularly young women of color that lived in low-income housing or low-income homes. And ironically, that just goes to show you how social media changes things, because in the year of 2017, of last year, about around this time, Alyssa Milano decided to tweet about the Me Too movement and asked other people to hashtag Me Too and talk about their experiences. And boy, did that get the ball really rolling, because a lot of people started coming out of the woodwork. Tons of people. If you actually go on to Wikipedia, you'll see all of these celebrities. And there's even some men that have taken accountability to show how they did participate in things of that nature and how they plan on changing. And it just got me really thinking, because I think that we as women, particularly probably African-American women, we experience a lot of sexual violence, sexual misconduct with us. And I would gather to say it starts as early as childhood. And that's why I think that it's harder for us to have discussions or go to anyone, because it's been happening for so long with us, even as children. I myself am a victim of molestation, and to me, molestation, fondling, it doesn't have to be penetration, it can be fondling. I have several instances where, you know, it was within the family and you just don't speak about it. And a part of it is, it's unfair. It carries you throughout, it carries on throughout your life, because you have that knowledge of what happened and who did it to you. But a part of it is that, one, a lot of times you don't tell, because one, for me, my mom always told me, hey, if a stranger touches you, then you let me or your father know. Well, it wasn't a stranger. And so for a child to differentiate, you know, okay, do I tell somebody? And it wasn't actual, it was more fondling. It wasn't actual penetration, but still, that marks the whole thing of, okay, keep it a secret. And some people actually have people to threaten them. I've heard of ministers. It's been, you know, through the church. I can remember a memory where I was 14 and I had just started working at Wendy's. It was my absolute first job. And the manager called me back into the office, turned out the lights, and chased me down and stuffed his tongue down my throat. That was my first experience with the Me Too movement as far as workplace. And then another one where I worked for a clothing or retail business, and it was an Indian. My boss was an Indian man, and once again, came in the bathroom and he tried to force himself on me. So I think it happens a lot more. And I think back then, social media has just taken everything to the next level. Now you can have conversations with people all across this world who have had similar or the same or worse experiences than you have. And you think, oh, I thought I was by myself in this. Hell, I can remember an instance where I was damn near gang raped by a group of young boys when I just needed assistance trying to get the bathroom light on. And you think about these things and how it affects your life, how it affects your sexual relationships, how it affects your relationships moving forward. And a lot of people, once again, especially people of color, we tuck these things away and we never discuss them. We never talk about these experiences, and then they carry on throughout our lives. And for some people, like with molestation or with rape, for some people, they are more promiscuous. For some women, they never marry, never want to have sexual relationships. It varies from person to person, and each person's experience is totally different. But it's a conversation that needs to be had. I think for me, And that's why I'm always like, I don't have any, I've never biologically, physically birthed a child. However, when I come across friends or people, especially, and I don't even just leave it to young women, I also say with young men, because we just think that the only people that get raped are girls, and we can't just fathom the fact that young boys are molested or raped, and that affects them too. But I, you know, it's crazy to think that some women or some people, in the interest of trying to find a mate or wanting to go out and enjoy their lives, maybe because they had their kids early or for whatever reason, will just leave their child with anybody. And you, oh, I trust them. And sometimes it's not about you trusting the person that you're leaving your child with, but they have people come over to their house. It's some sick ass individuals out here that looks at your child like they are full on grown ass woman, especially when your child starts getting more and more developed. And I always feel like boys to a fault are, especially when they're in a certain age, that they're asexual. Just my personal opinion. I'm not a doctor. Don't sue me for it. In my personal opinion, I have been around young boys who at the time they come across as being asexual. Asexual is not really necessarily acting boyish or acting girlish. They just are kids. If you study the some kids, some boys and some girls, they will hug and kiss each other. Two boys will hug and kiss each other, and it's not a second thought. They just do it because that's just what they feel to do. It isn't until we correct them on and say boys don't kiss other boys or girls don't kiss girls, and boys play with trucks and not dolls, and so on and so forth, and you just hope that they go in that direction. And then you have these sick ass people who are sitting there who likes kids or who likes little boys, and you would never be the wiser, and you say, oh, you stay with Uncle Tommy while we run to the store right quick, and Uncle Tommy could possibly be doing something to your son or your daughter. My experiences is, you know, for me personally, it always happened when the adults were gone either to the mall or to the store, or they ran somewhere really quick, and this person basically took advantage of a situation. And I was, believe it or not, when I was a lot younger, I was very quiet. I didn't speak a lot. And I think the reason why it didn't affect me as much is because there was no penetration. However, it's always been in the back of my mind, and it's always led me to believe that I wasn't the first, and I'm sure I wasn't the last, and I definitely wasn't the only. And so in this day and age, in this time, we need to not only just speak our truth, but be more aware and be more mindful of, one, who you live your kids with, and two, something happens to you at work, say something. We're so used to just tucking it in and not saying anything. That goes back to even with my whole issue with workplace bullying. Back then, even though that was in 09, still social media wasn't as big, or even I don't know why I never thought to pursue it as a harassment case, which in looking at it now, I so would have, could have possibly won a case against where I work, because if I would have been the type of person that would have come back and shot up the whole place, and then people are like, oh, I didn't know it was that bad. I didn't know that she was experiencing. The only difference that separates me from a lot of people is that I had to pray every single day for my sanity of being able to go, and I had bills, And best believe I was trying to get the hell up out of there. But until then, I had bills that needed to be paid and I just could not quit my job. So the only alternative I had was to pray and just make the best of a bad situation. And that situation lasted for 4 whole years. And so we need to do better. There are a lot more avenues and places and people we can reach out to, especially now with the Me Too movement. Best believe is that if it's happened to you, you're not the only person that it's happened to. I remember just about every last person's name who's ever assaulted me. And believe it, I mean, and at some point I was a fighter. I am a fighter. When stuff like that happened to me, even with the possible gang rape, I fought my ass off. And the thing that saved me was that room was pitch black. So not only did I fight, I was able to be quick and fast and duck into a stall where no one could see me and they couldn't find me. And I was just so fortunate. There are situations, you know, so many things about me that people don't know, or people might not even know about you, that defines who you are. And they just think, oh, you know, she's this way because that way. No, I'm this way because of my experiences. So I hope that this recording is a blessing to someone and to encourage someone who probably has not spoken out to speak out to the Me Too movement. This is Kim Knox. This is your girl, Kim Knox, and welcome to my podcast. Today, I am taking on the topic of the Me Too movement. With all the conversation and the talks around everything from Bill Cosby to Brett Kavanaugh, it's hard to ignore. Just in case you're wondering, the Me Too movement actually started back in 2006 by a young woman at the time, Tamara, I forgot her last name. However, it was basically started to help survivors of sexual violence, particularly young women of color that lived in low-income housing or low-income homes. And ironically, that just goes to show you how social media changes things, because in the year of 2017, of last year, about around this time, Alyssa Milano decided to tweet about the Me Too movement and asked other people to hashtag Me Too and talk about their experiences. And boy, did that get the ball really rolling, because a lot of people started coming out of the woodwork. Tons of people. If you actually go on to Wikipedia, you'll see all of these celebrities. And there's even some men that have taken accountability to show how they did participate in things of that nature and how they plan on changing. And it just got me really thinking, because I think that we as women, particularly probably African-American women, we experience a lot of sexual violence, sexual misconduct with us. And I would gather to say it starts as early as childhood. And that's why I think that it's harder for us to have discussions or go to anyone, because it's been happening for so long with us, even as children. I myself am a victim of molestation, and to me, molestation, fondling, it doesn't have to be penetration, it can be fondling. I have several instances where, you know, it was within the family and you just don't speak about it. And a part of it is, it's unfair. It carries on throughout your life, because you have that knowledge of what happened and who did it to you. But a part of it is that one, a lot of times you don't tell, because one, for me, my mom always told me, hey, if a stranger touches you, then you let me or your father know. Well, it wasn't a stranger. And so for a child to differentiate, you know, okay, do I tell somebody? And it wasn't actual, it was more fondling. It wasn't actual penetration, but still that marks the whole thing of, okay, keep it a secret. And some people actually have people to threaten them. I've heard of ministers. It's been, you know, through the church. I can remember a memory where I was 14 and I had just started working at Wendy's. It was my absolute first job. And the manager called me back into the office, turned out the lights, and chased me down and stuffed his tongue down my throat. That was my first experience with the Me Too movement as far as workplace. And then another one where I worked for a retail business, and it was an Indian. My boss was an Indian man, and once again, came in the bathroom and he tried to force himself on me. So I think it happens a lot more. And I think back then, social media has just taken everything to the next level. Now you can have conversations with people all across this world who have had similar or the same or worse experiences than you have. And you think, oh, I thought I was by myself in this. Hell, I can remember an instance where I was damn near gang raped by a group of young boys when I just needed assistance trying to get the bathroom light on. And you think about these things and how it affects your life, how it affects your sexual relationships, how it affects your relationships moving forward. And a lot of people, once again, especially people of color, we tuck these things away and we never discuss them. We never talk about these experiences, and then they carry on throughout our lives. And for some people, like with molestation or with rape, for some people, they are more promiscuous. For some women, they never marry, never want to have sexual relationships. It varies from person to person, and each person's experience is totally different. But it's a conversation that needs to be had. I think for me, and that's why I'm always like, I've never biologically, physically birthed a child. However, when I come across friends or people, especially, and I don't even just leave it to young women, I also say with young men, because we just think that the only people that get raped are girls, and we can't just fathom the fact that young boys are molested or raped, and that affects them too. But it's crazy to think that some women or some people, in the interest of trying to find a mate or wanting to go out and enjoy their lives, maybe because they had their kids early or for whatever reason, will just leave their child with anybody. And I trust them. And sometimes it's not about you trusting the person that you're leaving your child with, but they have people come over to their house. It's some sick ass individuals out here that looks at your child like they are full on grown ass woman, especially when your child starts getting more and more developed. And I always feel like boys to a fault are, especially when they're in a certain age, that they're asexual. Just my personal opinion. I'm not a doctor. Don't sue me for it. In my personal opinion, I have been around young boys who at the time they come across as being asexual. Asexual is not really necessarily acting boyish or acting girlish. They just are kids. If you study some boys and some girls, they will hug and kiss each other. Two boys will hug and kiss each other, and it's not a second thought. They just do it because that's just what they feel to do. it isn't until we correct them on and say boys don't kiss other boys or girls don't kiss girls, and boys play with trucks not dolls, and so on and so forth, and you just hope that they go in that direction, and then you have these sick ass people who are sitting there who likes kids or who likes little boys, and you would never be the wiser, and you say, oh, you stay with Uncle Tommy while we run to the store right quick, and Uncle Tommy could possibly be doing something to your son or your daughter. My experiences is, you know, for me personally, it always happened when the adults were gone either to the mall or to the store, or they ran somewhere really quick, and this person basically took advantage of a situation. And I was, believe it or not, when I was a lot younger, I was very quiet. I didn't speak a lot. And I think the reason why it didn't affect me as much is because there was no penetration. However, it's always been in the back of my mind, and it's always led me to believe that I wasn't the first, and I'm sure I wasn't the last, and I definitely wasn't the only. And so in this day and age, in this time, we need to not only just speak our truth, but be more aware and be more mindful of, one, who you live your kids with, and two, something happens to you at work, say something. We're so used to just tucking it in and not saying anything. That goes back to even with my whole issue with workplace bullying. Back then, even though that was in 09, still social media wasn't as big, or even I don't know why I never thought to pursue it as a harassment case, which in looking at it now, I so would have, could have possibly won a case against where I work, because if I would have been the type of person that would have come back and shot up the whole place, and then people like, oh, I didn't know it was that bad. I didn't know that she was experiencing. The only difference that separates me from a lot of people is that I had to pray every single day for my sanity of being able to go, and I had bills, and best believe I was trying to get the hell up out of there. But until then, I had bills that needed to be paid, and I just could not quit my job. So the only alternative I had was to pray and just make the best of a bad situation. And that situation lasted for 4 whole years. And so we need to do better. There are a lot more avenues and places and people we can reach out to, especially now with the Me Too movement. Best believe is that if it's happened to you, you're not the only person that it's happened to. I remember just about every last person's name who's ever assaulted me. And believe it, I mean, and at some point I was a fighter. I am a fighter. When stuff like that happened to me, even with the possible gang rape, I fought my ass off. And the thing that saved me was that room was pitch black. So not only did I fight, I was able to be quick and fast and duck into a stall where no one could see me and they couldn't find me. And I was just so fortunate. There are situations, you know, so many things about me that people don't know, or people might not even know about you, that defines who you are. And they just think, oh, you know, she's this way because that way. No, I'm this way because of my experiences. So I hope that this recording is a blessing to someone and to encourage someone who probably has not spoken out to speak out to the Me Too movement. This is Kim Knox.
The podcast you just heard was published with Anchor. Got something you want to say to the creator of this show? Send them a voice message using the Anchor app, free for iOS and Android.